Good Dao. We'll see you again.
Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. On today's show, journalist Mike McCulloch will again fill in for me this week, as he did last week with a documentary produced in Abbotsford, British Columbia. We'll be meeting with the musician Shamir Virgo, a singer-songwriter from Surrey, BC, who's enjoying some success. His song, Roses, has more than 1.7 million listens on Spotify and SoundCloud.
One of the first songs that he showed me that he wrote was a song called Roses. The first line, just a killer line. It goes, heartache covered in roses. You know, like, what a way to start a song. And then, boom, you're hooked. You're drawn right in.
Mike McCulloch, who will spend this half hour with Virgo, as well as with some of his friends and mentors.
The first day we met, we ended up just writing roses.
Yeah, we kind of like built off of it.
I don't know, it just came out naturally.
And then we're writing the song back and forth, had it on a loop.
When it came time to write the chords for Roses, and I was like, you know what? Let's apply some of the jazz harmony that we're learning. You know, after a few more writing sessions, we had a finished song between the two of us, and it came up fairly easily.
Yeah. Oh, Wait.
I got sick of the sorrow, but I want to see you tomorrow.
With Shamir, we kind of go back and forth with this song since the last show even.
Yeah.
And it's been one of those fun spots for us. For sure.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I enjoy it. But, yeah. Keeps me going.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Greetings, nice to have you with us. My name is Boris Hassan. Shamir Virgo is a 23-year-old rhythm and blues recording artist and songwriter from Surrey, BC, who, when he's not attending class at the University of the Fraser Valley, has recently been wowing crowds and gaining a fan base performing around the Lower Mainland. Virgo is enjoying some early success with The Algorithm, one of his first songs, a track called Roses, which he wrote with friend Amir Kuro, has more than 1.7 million listens on Spotify and SoundCloud. In this brief look at one of Canada's exciting new artists, Mike McCulloch in Abbotsford caught up with Shamir and some of Shamir's friends, collaborators, and one-time mentor. Here's Mike McCulloch.
This is Shamir Virgo.
Heartache covered in roses. I'm done trying to control it. I'm waiting for you to see.
I genuinely just really love, I have a really great big love for music.
But I'd rather be with you than in my dreams.
Very blessed. Very blessed to be here right now and to be able to express and share my art in the way that I do. Yeah. Thank you.
Maybe I could show you.
His likability was infectious. Everybody loved him.
He is so thoughtful and he is so sweet. It's great to know someone as awesome and talented as him. I also have him as a really, really close friend.
Shamir was the complete package.
I'm waiting for you to see.
He has dope music.
Music for him is part of a thread in the tapestry of developing a community.
Community is very important, not just with music, but just in general. It's very important for just us as humans.
Heartache covered in roses.
Roses by Shamir Virgo and Amir Kuro. Yeah, Shamir told me that was the second song he ever wrote. And we'll get into that and much more in a conversation with Shamir on this edition of Viewpoints, brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative. I met with Shamir at CIVL Studios in the Student Union Building of the University of the Fraser Valley's Abbotsford campus. So nice to meet you, Shamir.
Nice to meet you, too.
That was the first of three meetups I had with Shamir over the course of about a week. The second was when Shamir and guitarist Elijah Williams welcomed me to a park in Surrey to see and hear their rehearsal for an upcoming show.
You got the list. Whoa.
I know.
In our interview, Shamir speaks about how much a collective he's part of called Couch Jams Collective offers him a sense of community. I was able to visit with Shamir in Vancouver and meet about a dozen plus people affiliated with Couch Jams gathered after a performance in the Mount Pleasant area. And Shamir, you know, he took the time to one by one introduce me to each and everyone there. And although I didn't record any interviews that night, I did come away with an impression of a young man who, for as musically talented as Shamir is, he is equal parts kind, thoughtful, and generous. An opinion shared, by the way, by Shamir's former high school musical theater teacher, John Harris, and ditto those sentiments from friend and musical collaborator, Amir. All right, let's get to know Shamir Virgo. This track is apropos, as it was the first song Shamir wrote. It's 2019's Faded Love.
I think I was always, like, involved in music, like, growing up. So, like, when I was younger, I used to sing in church. We used to have like a children's choir that I would like sing at, and we would just like be doing like different arrangements of different songs, and then we would go and like perform them for like Saturday church or like just performances, like concerts that we would host. And then like in high school I did some like musical theater, and then also just kind of dabbled in music. So I've always been around it. Somewhere along the lines of like end of high school, I was like, wow, like I really love music. I really enjoy and embody like all that I want to be when I'm around music. So like, why don't I like create something, you know? Teacher, Mr. Harris, he was the one that kind of like fostered that growth. He was the one that pushed me forward and was like, hey, you should continue to do this. You should continue to, you know, pursue music. You sound great. This is something that like not a lot of people are able to do or able to like even stick with or even have the drive to stick with. And if you love it so much, then you should continue to do it. Yeah.
I thought back in those days, I don't know where his future is going to take him, but I really, really hope that he pursues this gift. And he has.
Mr. Harris, if it wasn't for him, I'd say I probably wouldn't be doing this right now.
To be able to be a part, be a small little, tiny little building block in the life of a student like that is a great honor. And it gives a meaning and a purpose to how you've spent your life in a way that's incredibly gratifying. My name's John Harris. I taught Shamir at a Langley Public School. It was called the UConnect Education Center. It was actually in three different locations, but Shamir participated in two of them, I think.
This was at Lochiel UConnect, so out in Langley.
Shamir showed right from the get-go tremendous musical aptitude. He was a dream to work with as a musical theater teacher. I find that it's very difficult to get a blend of skills where a student can act and sing well. And Shamir was, right from the beginning, the complete package.
Are you different? Feels different.
The thing that really struck me musically was that not only did he have the musical skills, he had just excellent pitch and phenomenal ability to learn music quickly.
Case in point, here's Shamir with Elijah working out Emmanuel's Need You.
I feel I need you to breathe, yeah. I feel I need you.
His voice was a mixture between this soothing melodic sound with some bite if he needed it. Really unusually beautiful tonal qualities in his voice.
For me, it started out as just wanting to like do something that I enjoyed, and music being the thing that I really, really did enjoy. I was like, well, I really want to dive headfirst into this. And so I didn't really know what that looked like, you know, and like what I had to do to grow at that point. But over now, looking back over the years, because of my like love for music and wanting to like get better and know more about it, it sort of became the driving force that led me to like want to do better and want to know more and want to improve my craft and as a singer, as well as just like a musician as well, because I play guitar. And so, yeah, it just really drove me to do better and want to know more. I think at that point I had just started dabbling in terms of just like songwriting, just putting things together here and there. I think I had like made my first single at that point. And then I had just shown him some of the stuff that I had done, because it's just like, you know, you were around music. Like, not a lot of people at that time in my life were musicians or really understood or cared to understand like music in general. So I was just like, okay, like this is something that I've done. Like, what do you think? What are your thoughts? You know,
one of the first songs that he showed me that he wrote was a song called Roses. The first line, it's just a killer line. It goes, heartache covered in roses. Like, what a perfect tension between some of the nicer parts of love and the inevitable challenges of love. You know, like he in a couple of words, he paints a picture that, like a paradoxical cognitive dissonance that, you know, like what a way to start a song. And then boom, you're hooked. You're drawn right in. A
good friend of mine, Amir Koro, he also makes music as well. He was the one that actually like put all of the, or most of the instrumentation together in terms of like the arrangement. I was just looking for people to work with in terms of like musicality, because at that point I didn't know anybody around me really who did music or knew about music. And so I was just asking friends, asking around. And one of my friends, Jay, who I had played with at church, he had connected me to Amir. He was like, yeah, like my friend Amir, he also makes music. Like, you guys should connect.
What's really interesting, actually, is that Shamir and I have mutual friends through church. So the same friends that I grew up playing with at church are also the ones that he knows.
I shot him a message.
He first sent me an Instagram DM.
And like asked if he would be free to, I guess, meet up and like talk about, you know, our musical experiences, and he responded.
And so it was a really, really natural connection.
Kind of started from there and just continued to talk. And then
he asked, hey, do you want to get together and perhaps work on some music? And so I said, yeah, absolutely. Would love to.
That led down the road of being able to like jam and just sing with him. And
given that we were both, you know, at that time in the same, you know, kind of in the same communities, kind of like going to the same things, listening to the same music. It just felt very natural to infuse that into our own styles.
Yeah, that's how it started.
He was a really, really nice guy. So it was a no-brainer to me, you know, to go and collaborate together and have fun. The first day we met, we ended up just writing Roses.
Yeah, we kind of like built off of it.
I don't know, it just came out naturally.
And then we're writing the song back and forth, had it on a loop.
When it came time to write the chords for Roses, I was still studying actually at Capilano, and I was at Capilano's jazz program. And I was like, you know what? Let's apply some of the jazz harmony that we're learning. Let's put it on a song. And, you know, after a few more writing sessions, we had a finished song between the two of us, and it came up fairly easily. He also takes initiative really well. If there's something that he wants to get done and he's like, I'll write the verse and get back to you, he will do it. The entire second verse of Roses was written entirely by him. After our first session, I was like, oh, we're missing a second verse. And he said, sure, I'll write it. And so then he just came back to me the next week and then said, all right, done. And I was like, this is great.
And then after the song was finished, we went and outsourced like different musicians that would be able to uplift the track and uplift the song better than we knew how to.
And the rest is history.
Today, between Spotify and SoundCloud plays, Roses has been listened to somewhere around 1.7 million times. And back at the park rehearsal, the song has continued to take on a life of its own.
Heartache covered in roses. Oh, wait.
Keep going.
Of the sorrow, but I want to see you tomorrow.
With Shamir, we kind of go back and forth with this song since the last show, even.
Yeah,
and it's been one of those fun spots for us, for sure.
Yeah,
but it's fun, I enjoy it. But keeps me going.
That was a spicy one.
That's okay. So it sounded nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was good.
Keep it simple, keep it clean.
Yeah, that's what you say.
I'm Elijah. I'm the guitarist accompanying Shamir.
We're locking in. We're locking in.
Yeah. How did it feel?
Good.
Yeah. Anything that you're like...
Later on, if we have time, we can kind of run through
later,
it again.
After?
I can clean it up.
Hey, it's Shamir Virgo, and you're listening to Viewpoints.
Real. Okay, cool. We're more than halfway through already. Can you believe that? We're doing pretty well for time.
His likability was infectious. Everybody loved him, and he was... There's an authenticity, a transparency, an intelligence, and this one's really important. He tunes in to other people, and he will immediately establish strong empathetic bonds. He can get right inside your soul. He was just a part of everybody's heart. You know, like everybody's heart just opened to him.
Shamir is incredibly easy to work with. He is so thoughtful, and he is so sweet, and he is so generous. And I think the things that make him a great friend are also what make him a great collaborator, because he's also not afraid to be like just fully honest and say, that wasn't, I'm not feeling that. Yeah, no, let's not do that. He is great to work with, and he can also hold his own solo.
Shout out to me. You know, yeah. It was a great experience working with him. He's a very, very, very talented and accomplished musician as well as artist, yeah.
Hopefully I'll see him next spring or summer. We'll see if we can cook up some music together. And but most importantly, just have a good time. I haven't seen him in 2 years, so that's long overdue.
He's going to school in Berkeley now, so he's pursuing his own path musically, which is great. Love that for him.
I'm living at Berkeley right now, actually.
Mir, love you very much. I miss you. We'll connect soon. We'll connect very, very soon.
Shamir would submit those first two tracks of his, Faded Love and Roses, to the CIVL Radio-presented Fraser Valley Music Awards in 2020, winning the award for excellence by a BIMPOC artist. That's Black, Indigenous, Mixed, Race, or Person of Color.
Thank you so much to everybody that's been able to support me and my music, and just be there to support me as a person of color. I just really appreciate receiving this award, and it really means a lot that I've come so far in the little time that I've been making music.
Shamir would go on to win first runner-up in the Dakota Leslie fan vote in that same awards broadcast, and station manager Aaron Levy gave him a call.
Yeah, we're giving you $2,100. Shamir, do you have any plans of what you're going to do with this money?
Oh my, I think I'm just going to reinvest it and keep on working, keep on doing the same thing I've been doing, and just continue my journey of music. This is just really crazy, oh my.
Through that, I was able to meet a lot of really great people and then gain more opportunities that way. It's been through connections through like Civil or like the UFE campus. It's been opportunities like that, just meeting people and being on campus.
And while Shamir is sure to continue creating memories on campus at UFV while he completes a Bachelor of Arts majoring in communications, his quest to build his career often leads him to Vancouver.
That's where most of the opportunities are, you know, and that's just like how it is. And it's like you have to get up and go where the money is, essentially, if that's like what you are doing to like make a living. A lot of the people I am working with and or collaborating with now, I met through the collective I'm also a part of and work with, Couch Jams Collective. And I had met the founder of Couch Jams, Matthew Yang. We actually met through Amir. So Amir and Matt, I believe, went to school together at Capilano University, and then I guess we had started talking from there and then just continued to be in touch. It started out as literally like an open mic or like a jam at Matt's house, and then through that we built Couch Jams into like a collective where people can come together and collaborate and grow and just, you know, experience just different art by other people that look like us. Our open mic series operates out of the Vancouver Black Library, so out in Chinatown at the Sunwa Center. Every month we usually host a open mic, and so BIPOC people can come, put their name down, and sign up to perform. And then they're also accompanied by musicians who also sign up to come play for them. And it's a great space to be able to like show your art to a group of people who you might not know for the first time. We use our platform to be able to promote and uplift queer and BIPOC artists out in the city. So giving them like a space to be able to like perform, but not only like just perform their music, but then give them an arrangement and then pay all the musicians for their work. Because I feel like the music scene in Vancouver especially is very like lacking. So there's not a lot of community. There's not a lot of places that you can go to connect with musicians and artists and creatives that also indulge in the same type of work that we do.
And just trying to reduce all of these memories I have of all of the musicals we did into, you know, kind of a short summation to, you know, capture the essence of this wonderful young man. Music for him is more than a craft. It's more than just doing, excelling at performing. It's more than just writing good songs. Music for him is just a thread, part of a thread in the tapestry of developing a community.
It's become like a very integral thing for me because I really stand behind community, and I really love that Couch Jams is able to offer that to so many people.
The music's important, but it's not the main thing. It's a thread that that will tie together a community of people that enjoy each other and bond with each other. That's what it is. That captures what he's all about.
Community is very important, not just with music, but just in general. It's very important for just us as humans. And I feel like a lot of people want community in Vancouver, but that's something that we don't have a lot of here, you know? And so I think it's very important because community is literally like, if you have a community around you, if you're going through a tough time, you're able to lean on that community for support in those times that you might not be able to do things like on your own. And it's very important for you to be able to like have people to like maybe bounce ideas off of. Yeah, that's what I think. That's what I think. It's very important to have community. That's why we started Couch Jams, because we want to be able to bring all the BIPOC people together so that we can like experience and be a part of a community that didn't exist until, you know. Me being from here, I feel like it hasn't separated me from like my culture, but I feel like it's distanced my closeness to it. So like I got family. My family's from Jamaica. I was born here, so I'm Jamaican originally. But I haven't spent very much time there. So in terms of like my music and like that whole aspect, they're really known for like their reggae music, Bob Marley, the Wailers, all of those, you know, that different style of music. None of my music sounds like that. And it's interesting because I feel like also in growing up here and not having like a bunch of, like I have family here, but in terms of just like musicality and being around like that genre of music, I'm very like distanced from it. I would love to experience it more, but in terms of just like my accessibility to that, it's been very limited, you know? So I think in terms of like my experience in that and my identity as an artist, it's almost been like, it's been very internalized. And so like a lot of the things that I feel in terms of like my music and how I should sound, it's not only like the outside, but a lot of how I feel towards myself, like, oh, should I be indulging in this type of music because this is who I am? But then also it's like, if I didn't grow up around it, you know, what am I supposed to do, you know? So it's not like I can just, you know, go and, you know, do it now that I know, like, this is who I am. It's just a little bit, it's more deeper than that. With my skin being such, like, the first thing people see, it's important for me to know what gravity and what effect that I might have on people when they see and hear me. And so just being able to understand, like, that aspect, as well as also, like, what other people that look like me have done. But I also think that it's important to also realize that people are people, and that just because I am a black artist doesn't mean that I make a certain type of music or sound a certain type of way, despite what is shown through social media in terms of just how artists now are marketed to be, especially people who look like me.
Shamir insists that his love, his passion for music is the primary driving force motivating him, not dreams of fame and fortune.
Honestly, I think that's the issue. I think a lot of artists like want to be big, and that's why they want to be artists. I think for me, like I genuinely just really love I have a really great big love for music. Like, I just, even if I'm not being paid for it, I'm not saying I don't want to be paid for it, but even if I'm not paid for, like, what I am able to create, like, I think the grounding thing for me with, like, sharing my music, my thing is that, like, as long as I'm able to touch something in the person hearing my songs, I am happy. I'm sold. That's all I need to feel, you know, blessed.
And how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm in a much better place than I was, like, earlier this year, for sure. I actually had, like, a bit of a, like, a car accident. There's a lot that I feel like could have gone wrong, and the fact that I'm here to be able to speak my truth is a testament to how blessed I am.
Let's have another sample of Shamir's music. Here's part of his latest single, I Don't Need You. Waiting.
Why couldn't I leave it behind, staying? That was the last song I was able to work on with Amir before he left to go to Berkeley.
I produced that song in collaboration with another really great producer, Gabe Yaron.
We had finished it a couple years ago.
It's representative of a certain period in time for the two of us.
We were both, like, going through some things at that point.
I'm very proud of what we were able to make.
Very proud, very happy to be able to point people to it when they ask about my music. I don't need you
anymore. He gets it.
There are some individuals that are destined to make the world a better place, and he's one of them.
Who he appears as in his songs is exactly who he is as a person. And I just can't wait for the rest of the world to get to know that.
For Viewpoints and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Mike McCullough.
So thanks so much to Mike McCullough and his many guests for filling in for us this week. A great documentary again. Thanks to all our journalists who took over the show for me over the past weeks with original and beautiful documentaries. Jules Bugiel in Montreal, Quebec. And to our BC journalists, Pamela Hassan and Smithers, as well as Mike McCullough in Abbotsford. Please come back anytime. To our national editors who help coordinate production, Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Merci. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative. If you want to get in touch with us, please write. Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. Okay, that's it for us this week. And until the next,
you heard
ciao.
Me twice, and I'm on my last excuse. And though it's crazy, maybe it's not your intention, but what if maybe the problem is you? And I say, I don't need you anymore. I don't need you. No, 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 no. All out of patience, I'm all out of love to give you now. I don't need you. I don't need you anymore. I said waiting. Anymore, foot out the door, I'm saying, I ran out of room for you, cause every time you hold me once, you hurt me twice, and I made my last excuse, and though it's crazy, maybe it's not your intention, but no more maybes, I know the problem is you, and I say, that I don't need you anymore, so I don't need you, no, 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 all out of patience, I'm all out of love to give you now, I don't need you anymore,
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
Going down and set it straight. When all is said and done, it ain't about you. I thought you were my missing piece, but the picture's already complete without you. Without. And I say, so I don't need you. More. So I don't need you. No, 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 no. All out of patience, I'm all out of love to give you now. I don't need you. I don't need you anymore. I don't need you.
I'm all out of love to give you now. I don't need you, I don't need you anymore. I don't need you, I don't need you anymore.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Plugged in My Ears. I'm your host, Sam, joined by my other hosts, Kyle and Adam. This week was a special week in Kingston, special weekend. Queens hosted their homecoming, and the Queens football team did marvelously well. Adam, I know you have the stats in front of you. Would you like to speak about it, perhaps?
Yeah, no, it was the annual homecoming game, and Queens took on the Waterloo Warriors, and they smoked them. It was 54-7. Waterloo didn't really stand a chance the whole game, and it did look more like a Queens women's rugby score than a Queens football score. But it's a good prep for the playoffs. I think Queens needed this win to get emotions high. They're going to be excited to play. It'll be interesting to see how they fare. They play against Windsor on the road, and Queens lost earlier in the season to Windsor in Windsor 25-21. So it should be a close matchup. Personally, I think Queens is going to be able to win this one. Windsor's kind of struggled throughout the rest of the season. They ended up being the 4th seed after starting off pretty hot. But I really like Queen's chances. That's October 26th they play, so that'll be really exciting to see. But yeah, hopefully they win, and then hopefully there's an upset, and maybe we get one more home game at Richardson. But yeah, no, it looks like it should be a good time.
No doubt, and Queens does have a chance still to make the Vanier Cup in Kingston at Queens this year.
Yeah.
So if there's a time to make a push, it certainly is now. And on a similar note, this upcoming Friday, a Queens women's rugby team plays Guelph in the OUA finals Friday night at 7 p.m. at Nixon Field. Yep. That'll be a good game as well. Those two teams have fared really well. The last time Queens played Guelph this season, Queens was down by 20 points at the end of the first half, and then they came back and won the game by 1 point against Guelph. So two superstar teams. Queens picked up a few really good players. This year, Chloe Daniels returned from the national team after winning a silver medal in the Olympics this year, and she's been leading the charge. But they have a good crew. It'll be an interesting game to watch, and certainly one that's worth paying attention to, because this is sort of one of the last years in which I think both these teams are going to have a complete monopoly over women's rugby in Ontario. But perhaps we'll talk about the NHL, because so much has been going on. Kyle, there's quite a few games. Yesterday we watched Montreal against
the Islanders.
The Islanders, that's right. What did you think about that game?
I mean, as I said last night, you know, Montreal is a team that always seems to have low expectations, at least from most of the hockey, you know, kind of sports fans last couple of years, and they always seem to do a bit better than those expectations. So, yeah, again, I'm kind of happy with how they're performing. They seem to have some players that are falling into their own. Cole Caulfield's been on fire, 6 goals in 6 games. So, yeah, you can't ask for a better start than that for him. Slavkovsky's looked, I would say, okay. Not as hot of a start as you'd probably want for him, but I wouldn't be too worried about it. The goaltending looked pretty solid. Primo maybe had some softer ones in there, but you know what? Not as bad as some goaltending we've seen around the league. So
yeah, that's for sure.
And as a backup, you know what? And again, but the expectations aren't super high, and they're still performing at a decent caliber.
Mm-hmm. Adam, what do you think about Montreal so far this year?
Well, actually, I was agreeing with Kyle for a second there when he said Slavkovsky was doing mid, but I just looked and he's got 6 points in 6 games. So I mean, that's not bad. Only one goal.
Well,
but
maybe it's because we've set the expectations so much higher for Slavkovsky because we know how good he can be.
That's true. He did have 50 points last year. Yeah. So I think this is like, he's on track. He's playing well. But Nick Suzuki doesn't have a goal yet, which I'm a little surprised about. He has been dishing the puck, 5 assists in 6 games, but no goals. And that's where Montreal's really struggling right now. And as Kyle said, the goaltending, when Montembeau starts, has looked all right. Primo, I think he's taken a few steps back, actually, because I think he was doing a lot better at the end of last season. But yeah, no, other than that, the offense hasn't really gotten going too well, other than Caulfield. Like, the next highest goal scorer has two, and it's Heinemann and Gallagher. So, I mean, maybe they need to get the goal scoring a bit from the Stars. I know Kirby Dach has had a really slow start to the year. He's got 1 point in six games.
The announcers like him, though.
Yeah.
They spam Kirby Dach.
Do they talk about Kirby Dach a lot?
I don't know if they actually do talk about him a lot, but I just heard his name a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting that I, you know, typically never used in the past, but I think it's an interesting stat line, is after games, it's actually usually betting companies that make this kind of sort of stuff, because it's software they use for putting odds on betting, but it's performance above expected. I don't remember exactly how they calculate this, but essentially it's just like standard, you know, expected points and performance metrics for each player, and then they rate it either above or under performance like values, and it's just interesting to look at that after each game. I think that's like the best indicator if a player had a really bad game or not.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example of a player that's been having some pretty below expectation performances. Thomas Chabot on the Ottawa Senators has been at the bottom of that metric just about every game I've seen this season, except for maybe that one game against
LA where they had
a huge amount of goals. But yeah, he's been well below performance metrics for the whole season. But anyways, that's a good way to kind of tell if a player's doing well or not.
Now, Kyle, Sam was telling me that you would never watch the Ottawa Senators until they're a 750 team. Like, they've got a 750 winning percentage. Is that true? Are the rumors true?
I don't know about 750. I said if they're below 500, I'm certainly not watching them.
Okay.
They've been okay this season.
They're at 600.
Yeah, I still have some doubts about that team, to be completely honest. I'm a bit more happy with the discipline I've seen this year. I think the discipline's been better. Let's hope that stays this way.
Yeah.
There's definitely been some sightings of Tim Stützle and Brady Tkachuk downtown Ottawa getting some pints. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Reliable sources too.
Yeah, he's definitely been getting a couple pints, but yeah, hopefully he keeps those to a minimal for the rest of the season, and we'll see a good new all-time high in points for Stützle.
Yeah, well, you have to assume he must be carb-loading with the pints. I think it's all methodically planned out.
Are either of you guys concerned with the injury to Ullmark?
You know what? You can't really be that upset, because we signed him for long-term. I think he's going to be a very important player in the Ottawa for a lot of years to come. Like, without solidifying our goaltending, our team was going nowhere anytime soon. And to be honest, we don't actually have that many prospects. Like, our prospect pool is really minimal, so it's kind of a now or never. We needed to sign him. The injury thing is not great.
Well, how long is he out for again? I can't remember.
It's not a long-term injury.
No, but it's a decent chunk. Or decent. Well, it feels like a decent
bit. He's supposed to be back soon. That's what I heard. Could be next game.
But as much as it sucks that Ullmark got injured, I still think Ottawa's biggest issue is their culture.
Our backup goaltending is not good.
No, that's a big issue.
We still need to get
Ottawa has a big defensive structure issue also. They don't do a very good job collapsing. In the D-zone, they start running really fast, trying to lay the body, and they open up a lot of gaps that are pretty easy for teams to slide through.
Sanderson has been absolutely golden for Ottawa. Like, he is carrying that team right now.
He is
actually unbelievable.
He's
been good in all metrics. Every game I've watched this season, he's had like game saving defensive plays, and then also offense as well. He's been producing like a crazy amount of points. So yeah, without him, they'd have some serious problems.
Yeah, and one of their big problems too is just Brady Tkachuk in general. I mean, I've said it many times before. He should not be a captain. I don't even think he should be on the first or second line.
I think I don't know about that, but
my point is Brady Tkachuk causes more issues than solving problems.
He is the team leader in points, though.
Yeah, he usually is.
He is usually the team leader in penalty minutes, which is a problem.
He's only got six this year, surprisingly. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. The discipline, he's dialed it back a bit. Yeah. Giroux's always been good, though. I think he's more of a natural leader, probably.
Mm-hmm. I think he leads by example.
I don't think Giroux's going to be here long-term.
Giroux's decently old now, too. I mean, he's not old, but he's in his mid-30s now.
Yeah.
It's not easy to keep playing.
He'll probably be retiring soon, but he's looked good.
But on the topic of prospects, Adam, you must be relatively happy with Logan Mailloux and Lane Hudson's performance.
Yeah, no, I loved what I saw from Mailloux last night, other than the awful shootout miss, but Lane Hudson's also playing solid right now. He was on quite the assist streak. He hasn't broken through and gotten that goal yet, but he looks good when he's commanding on the power play, which I like to see. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe if he gets more shots on the first power play unit, he'll be able to maybe get to his full potential. But right now, 4 assists in 6 games. I can't complain much for a rookie defenseman.
No.
He looks like he belongs out there. And I know him and Savard, his defense partner, they've gotten hit pretty bad with the plus-minus every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But because Hudson's out on the power play, his plus-minus is 1, while Savard's is -8. So regular, like, during even strength, I don't know if Hudson is there completely on defense. He's an undersized guy. So, I mean, it is kind of hard for him to throw the body.
I was about to say, he's pretty small.
Yeah, I was watching him against L.A., and he was battling Adrian Kempe in front of the net. And Kempe's not the biggest guy, but he's a forward. And Kempe was giving him the works. Like,
was he?
Yeah, like Hudson couldn't move him. And Kempe got to the front of the net pretty easily. Mm-hmm. So I think it just comes down to maybe, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of David Savard, if I'm being honest. I know he's a fan favorite Montreal local guy. But I've been kind of hoping they've traded him like the last 2 or 3 years. He's a good veteran presence. He has Stanley Cup winning experience. But I don't know. I'm just not too impressed with his defense skills. And I don't know if he's the best guy I would pair up with Hudson, who obviously they're trying to develop his offense, but also develop his defense. So
I think Montreal needs a bit more size. They're a little bit of a small team.
They've got the power forwards, though, like Slavkovsky, Doc, with Demidov coming over next year. They're going to have like a bunch of forwards that are over 6'3". So that's good. But on defense, they got Gouley, who's kind of injury prone. He's already injured again. He's pretty big. Jack Eye's going to be a third line defenseman, I think, for his whole career. I mean, I can't see him. He's too much of a liability penalty wise to be getting first or second pairing minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
unless there's like a gap that opens up and somehow his game changes.
Yeah. But I've watched the first few games. Montreal does play physical, but I do know what you mean. They do have undersized players with Hudson and Caulfield.
Yeah.
And I mean, Suzuki isn't even really that big. I mean, he's a unit. Well, how big
he's
is solid,
he's like, what, 5'10"?
Yeah, but I think he's
like 165.
He's pretty heavy.
You think he's heavy? Oh, I thought you were going to say he's light. He's 215.
He's really heavy.
He doesn't look that heavy. Maybe it's just the way the equipment fits him.
That might have reduced.
Well, that's kind of like Crosby. Crosby's 5'11". He's 230 or something along those lines.
He's 96 kilos.
Yeah,
96 kilos. Yeah, that's 200 and something.
211.
211.
So he's quite a bit bigger than before. But no, I mean, different play styles. I mean, but yeah, it's more for the playoffs. Like, you don't notice these things, like size, as much in the regular season, but come playoffs, you need just a little extra size to kind of wear the other team down. That's how most teams end up grinding out a win, is just crushing the other team physically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And just on the topic of prospects, because he's from Ottawa and we know him, Brant Clark's been doing pretty good this season on LA.
Yep.
Against Ottawa, he had 3 assists. He put up another assist the game before that in Toronto. No points in the other 3 games, but nonetheless, 4 points, 5 games, +1. That's not bad. I don't know. I mean, I know how good he can be, but for guys like you, what strikes you as something that's good about his game? Like, do you think he's going to become a legit defenseman for LA? Do you think he has the possibility of replacing Doughty? Because he's getting top minutes. I mean, his average time on ice is 17 minutes and 45 seconds as a rookie.
Yeah. That's a lot. Yeah. I don't know. I think that game really inflated Clark's
points.
Yeah. Obviously, an 8-7 game is going to.
Yeah.
So I think you got to take that into consideration. He's definitely a late bloomer. He's one of like the last guys from that draft class to like
make it
be like a consistent NHLer, like at least in the first round. Or he was picked pretty high.
He was picked 8th overall. Yeah, and the biggest concern at the time was his maturity. That was the cited reason for him not going before that, because he could have been top 3.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I think he's been in the minors and juniors for long enough, and I think that maybe that time was needed for him to develop maybe a little more mature attitude. But I mean, he looks all right to me. I mean, I don't know exactly how good he can be. I think Drew Doughty is a star. So I don't, or at least was a star at his prime.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I would go that far in saying that Brant Clark right now, from what I've seen, could replace the presence of Drew Doughty. Doughty also has really good leadership skills.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and I think without Kopitar there, he would have been the captain. Is Doughty the captain?
No, it's Kopitar. No.
Okay,
yeah. Kopitar. He's been Kopitar for a while.
Yeah, Kopitar is, like, he's a great captain.
He's been there for so long. I can't actually think of LA without Kopitar's captain.
No.
I don't remember.
He's got to be one of the longest tenured players. Like,
yeah, he's also a very unique player. He's the only player to come make the NHL from his home country.
Oh, Slovenia.
Yeah, actually, I had a buddy from Slovenia who played on the World Juniors team for Slovenia, and he told me that Kopitar is a household name in Slovenia. Hockey's not even the biggest sport in the country, but everyone knows him because he's the national icon at this point.
Yeah, he's super famous, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm surprised he's never scored 100 points in a season, but...
He played...
Then again, you have to consider the early parts of his career and the majority of his career was played when the NHL averaged 2.5 goals a game.
I mean, like, he's got to be one of the most consistent players I've ever seen now that I'm looking at these stats. Like...
What does he have?
Like, he's got 1,200 points in 1,300 games.
That's pretty, pretty good.
Yeah.
That's like, what, 0.88 points a game?
Yeah. Yeah. He's gotten, I'm not going to say he's gotten better with age, but like 61 points in his rookie year, and that was 2006.
You know what's something interesting about Kopitar?
Yeah.
Yes, 18 years. ESPN Fantasy always predicts that he will go down the next year.
Yeah.
And he never does. He's stayed consistent. Like, for the last 3 or 4 years, I can remember, he's been projected to do decently worse in points than the year previous. And he, if not, you know, usually does the same, if not better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely interesting to see.
He's got 2 cups, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does.
He's got to be a genuine Hall of Famer.
I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think his jersey gets retired 3 or 4 years after he leaves L.A.
I mean, he's been in L.A. since 2006. I mean, that's a long time. That's almost coming up on 20 years, right?
So. Yeah.
And he doesn't really look like he's slowing down. Last year he had 70, and the year before he had 74.
Impressive, yeah.
50 in the lockout shortened season, or COVID shortened season.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. The highest he ever got was 92.
Mm-hmm. One thing I just thought of, because we were speaking about guys who've been around for a while, Crosby just got his 1,600 point the other day.
But
people forget this. His rookie season, he had 102 points as a rookie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is nuts. And then the next year, in less games, he had 120. Imagine if he hadn't had so many concussions, how good he would have been.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of, well, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You never know, but so let's transfer off to some other players. An interesting one, I think, is Steven Stamkos and the Predators. That has been
a problem.
Pretty weird start to the season. That being said, I heard a good take about this, is that they're a new team with a lot of new moving pieces, and they're definitely trying to work out the team chemistry and stuff. You know, they moved in Steven Stamkos. That's a huge change to their power play, everything, right? So everything's changed on their team. And they obviously have been having a little bit of trouble kind of working out that chemistry and figuring out how to win games. But yeah, they haven't looked so hot at the start of the season, 0-5. That's definitely not what you're looking for as a Nashville Predators fan.
Yeah, and only one goal from Stamkos, too. So
he's minus six also.
Yeah, it hasn't looked great. They got Marchessault, too, this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. Strange start to the season, but Edmonton proved last year, doesn't matter how you start, matters how you finish. I mean, Edmonton's got to be like the most roller coaster team I've seen in a while. Just because, well, it's like a long, drastic roller coaster. It's like big downhill, and then the 20-game win streak brings you right back up.
The thing is, like, something with the Nashville Predators, you just, with this many strong players, like, you just know this won't stay. Like, they will not end with this poor finish to the season. It's guaranteed.
Yeah. Or if they do end up not doing well for a while longer, the coaching staff will be replaced.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you have to think that's a coaching issue rather than a playing issue.
They will make the playoffs. 100%. I have no doubt in my mind. Whether it be a wild card spot or even higher, I have no doubt in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
A wild card spot would definitely be lower than, you know, predictions, but it doesn't really matter, right, if they show up in the playoffs.
No, I don't think the Central's even, like, the hardest. It's not even. No. I think it might be the weakest division. So if they don't finish top three in the Central, that'd be very interesting. Yeah,
that'd be low.
Yeah, that'd be definitely below expectations. And then you put yourself in the situation where you got to play either the winner of the Pacific, I think it's gonna be Edmonton, or you got to play the winner of the Central, which is gonna be, I think, Dallas. So I mean, those are both two teams I would not want to play in the first round.
No, I would not.
So,
but there's been a weird start to the season for a lot of teams, right? The Canucks have had kind of a weird start as well. Oilers had a weird start.
Well, the Canucks, I think their success last year was somewhat of a fluke.
I agree with Sam.
I don't actually think the Canucks are that good of a team. And people are going to be bothered by that, but they have good players, but they really don't have great structure. And the second you hit them, they can't do anything.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with Demko, actually, right? So Demko is a fantastic goalie, but he's so injury prone. And, you know, Silas is decent. He's decent. But they haven't, they just don't have that structure to make up for when he's gone. It's just such a steep, you know, loss in that team to have him constantly missing from games. So yeah, that's that to me, that's actually the biggest factor for them. And it happened in the past, right? Demko gets injured and team morale goes down in Canucks because they're just less confident in their goaltending and everything, right? So it definitely is a huge impact on their game.
Oh, yeah. Totally. And also one thing I found kind of interesting, Winnipeg's still undefeated right now. Three wins at home, one win on the road, plus 13. I think they have the highest differential in the league.
No, you know what? I have to say, Winnipeg's playoff performance last season was weird. That was a very weird performance. They got absolutely manhandled and crushed. And they looked really good in the regular season last year. They were dominating teams. And for a large majority of the season, they're actually the best team in the league for many weeks in a row.
Yeah. No, Winnipeg goes, they're a streaky team, I find. So
they're hotter. They're a hotter cold team, and if they're cold, they're really cold. Yeah.
I also like their roster. I think they've got a Kyle Connor, I think, is one of the most underrated forwards in the NHL.
He's pretty smooth.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's pretty smooth.
Yeah. I think we should talk about how Edmonton is, they've only scored 12 goals this year.
I know. And they're doing the same things last year.
Only more than San Jose and Nashville.
12 goals, four called back. I mean, it's kind of the same.
True. Four called back.
But I mean, that only gets you up to 16.
Same.
And there's teams in the league that have scored like 28 goals.
Yeah. No, I mean, the Oilers, is literally, like, you know what? You can't make it up. It's the same story as it started last season. Bounces are just not going their way. Yeah, they're having just weird kind of games. They're bottom six. Not really figuring it out quite yet. I thought Jeff Skinner has been really good. He's looked really good so far. Arvidsson, okay. He's been pretty slippy, slidey on the ice, falling a lot.
Yeah.
He's a hard worker.
Falling a lot.
But, you know, if you've ever seen Arvidsson playing in the playoffs, he used to be on LA and face Oilers all the time. Arvidsson is a huge impact on the ice in the playoffs. He's a really good grinder, and he'll make a big impact. So I'm not too worried about him. Yeah, the bottom six, though, yeah, there's definitely some questions on the Oilers. The goaltending not been fantastic either, so.
Yeah.
Darnell Nurse, not good as usual, but that's not really that surprising on that team.
But Bush's performance is a bit surprising.
Bush has been low, yeah. I mean, that's because the power play hasn't been clicking. The defensive structure's been a little bit low. Ekholm's been solid. I mean, you could say the same thing as last season, you'd say, right? Like, pucks aren't going their way. They haven't really figured out how to, you know, move the puck how they want to. And I'm sure it will click at some point. So I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah. I don't know. What about the Leafs? I love ripping on the Leafs.
Well, I forget who posted it. I think it was Elliot Friedman that tweeted it, that in the first two games, the core five had almost no points except for Marner.
Well, Marner's got 5 points in five games.
Which is expected. That's the minimum
one,
for Marner.
One, no, actually.
I would expect at least a point a game from Marner.
He's getting paid like 95 to 100 point money.
That's what I mean. I expect minimum point a game from him.
Yeah, like minimum point a game is a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Especially with who he's playing with.
Yeah.
But I mean, you look at the Leafs' leading goal scorer, Bobby McCann. Just who everyone thought it would be after five games, right? And he's actually only played in four games. Like, Nylander also has three, but Matthews looks kind of awful. Two goals, two assists.
Yeah, not great.
Five games. They're 500.
You know what? I watched the Prime series, and there's one of the episodes is about William Nylander.
Oh yeah.
And it's definitely interesting. I don't know how the Leafs locker room feels about that video, but it definitely does not look too positive on Marner or Matthews, I have to say.
Yeah.
Confirming most of what I already thought, but, you know, William Nylander's a stand-up guy. He's been really important to that team. I'm not surprised they signed him for a huge contract, but some big changes are coming to the Leafs.
Yeah. I would just describe Toronto Maple Leafs as a team of prima donnas, honestly. And I don't mean that in a rude way, though, but honestly, when are these guys not dealing with some, like, nonsense?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point. But you know what I also say is that the goaltending has been really solid for the Leafs so far.
Yeah.
Like, Stolarz looks great. Like, he's got a 1.79 goals against average, 937 save percentage. and then the backup Hildeby is 202 goals against average and 913 save percentage. So like, this is just strange because I feel like this has always been a weakness for the Leafs, mm-hmm. and now they don't have the offense. Mm-hmm. Now the offense isn't there. So I don't know. I think they'll eventually figure it out. Craig Berube has made some interesting moves when it comes to scratching players. Max Pacioretty, who looked pretty good in the first few games, got healthy scratched twice now. So that was surprising to see. He said that it's just like an odd man out, but I find it strange. You don't usually scratch a guy that's on your third line. Usually it's more of a fourth line kind of guy rotating out. So I don't know. Obviously, Berube knows much more than I do, but I don't know. Maybe I'm a biased Habs fan.
Pacioretty is getting a bit older. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know why they would scratch him, though. It is a bit weird.
Yeah. He's playing solid hockey. I mean, what, compared to the other guys.
And also, like, he's a good leader guy.
Yeah.
He has great leadership, and he's the most experienced on that team other than Tavares, maybe, in terms of playing in clutch moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also, just separately, do you guys think it was a smart idea to give Matthews the C?
I think it's a weird play because Tavares has got one year left in his contract.
Yeah.
So
Matthews does not strike me as captain material.
No, not at all.
No, he does not strike me.
I'd be more inclined to give it to William Nylander, but that's kind of, even that would be interesting. So,
yeah. Well, William Nylander's problem, I think, is that's, I would say Toronto has this issue where there's a bunch of guys who expect to be franchise players, and they're all fighting to be the franchise player. And so as much as they're teammates, one gets the impression that there's an internal rivalry at play. Mm. And I think that probably is taking a toll on a lot of their success. But also, I don't know if you can even do this in the NHL anymore, but they should have done what they used to do. When they were trying to onboard a new captain, they'd create co-captains, and you just have two C's on the team. Mm. Although, I don't think you can do that in the NHL anymore.
Probably not.
I know you can have, like, up to, like, three or four alternates and no captain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean,
because Montreal did that one year.
Montreal didn't have a captain. Like, Montreal's pretty picky with who they choose as their captain. Usually it has to be someone of pretty, like, high standing, which I was surprised when Suzuki got the captaincy, because he was pretty young when he got it, and I can't say he really struck me as a leader, but, I mean, it seems like he's doing a decent job. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just because I was used to Shea Weber and Max Pacioretty, who were...
I thought Pacioretty was a better captain than Shea Weber was in Montreal, though.
I don't agree. Shea Weber, that playoff run to the finals, played through so many injuries. Like, he's done. He never played again after that final. Like, he literally gave it his all to finish off. That's showing a lot for the team. And he was a great captain in Nashville, too.
That's what I mean. To me, he always struck me as a Nashville's captain.
Yeah. He actually put up... I was looking at his stats. Like, he played a lot of years in Nashville, but he still played, like, 5 or 6 years in Montreal. Yeah, he had a decent chunk of his career.
I do think Montreal got the better end of the bargain when they traded P.K. Subban for Shea Weber, though.
I think it's debatable. I mean, that's I think that's it was a very fair trade.
It was a very fair trade, but I think that Shea Weber proved more useful than P.K. Subban did in the ensuing years.
I mean, they both went to the Cup Finals with the respective teams they got traded to. So, I mean, you can't really compare the two. Subban definitely, I would say, fell off hard.
Going
to Nashville. But Weber was never really an offensive standout guy. But he continued to play good defense on Montreal. So,
yeah.
I mean, you can make arguments in both directions. But
why do you think Montreal wanted to give up an identity guy like P.K. Subban?
Oh, I think he was just a little too much of a personality for the people that were in charge of Montreal at the time. And now that they're not, I think P.K. Subban, I was talking to Zayden about this. If P.K. Subban was on Montreal now, I think they would love him. And I think it wouldn't even be like a question to trade him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's bringing like excitement, energy to the team that, I don't know, clearly needs it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd be a good leader for the rookies too. So I don't know, but... Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know about some of Subban's takes online, but you know, he's got a really hard time not being biased. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, really hard time. He's unique.
And you know what? He ripped on the Leafs pretty hard about that early Patrick Laine injury. So you know what?
Yeah.
Sometimes he has good takes, but usually they're kind of just shooting in the dark. And
I agree with him on that one, but that's besides the point.
He's good at riling the people up.
Yeah, everyone,
thank you for tuning in again to Plugged in My Ears, and we'll see you guys next week.
Living in Kingston or nearby? Here's a hot tip for you. Rent your water heater from Utilities Kingston and support your community. When you rent from us, proceeds go towards local climate initiatives. With affordable monthly payments, no maintenance headaches, and quick service, renting just makes sense. Plus, we've got locally based technicians who respond fast, within 24 hours. Check out Rent.
You are listening to CFRC Radio from Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
CFRC 101.9 FM has new social media. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at CFRC Music and keep up with the latest announcements about our programming and projects. Follow us today at CFRC Music.